You might think vanity plates are a great idea, but beware, they can sometimes cost you thousands. This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Welcome to the Focus Group. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host, Tim Bennett. Focus Group is coming to you live if you are, live the tape if you're watching on YouTube, and that's Wednesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and your audio platform of choice is going to stream us as audio on Saturdays. Focusgroupradio.com is the URL for our website. You can find out about us there, and TFG Unbuttoned, our Tuesday podcast, audio only, three stories that prep you for the week ahead and probably bring you things you might not have heard about before. We want to thank our partner Deep Discount here on the Focus Group. We're going to visit with them later in the show, just in time for some final Christmas gifts, which I think you could get under the wire. We have some suggestions for you. And here we are, Mr. Bennett, sliding into Christmas.
Right. It's funny when you mention, because our show really, it's like Lucy, where it's a Wednesday afternoon fine arts league, but they meet on Tuesday because no one's available on Wednesdays. So for us, we released the show on Wednesday because that's when the studio was available. But in effect, it's a Saturday show, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know if it matters anymore when we release the show now that everybody time shifts. What do you think? We should ask the audience.
I think our YouTube audience does tune in on Wednesdays. I watch the numbers tick up from, you know, in the afternoon to Thursday, Friday. And then the bigger audience, though, has always been audio since we were on the satellite radio platform. Hey, I got some listener mail to share with you. So, Tim, sometimes we often talk about, you know, like Soul Train and American Bandstand and how the kids all look so super thin. Well, one of our listeners, Lisa, and Lisa's actually won, I think, in the past with Criterion, when we do John Says Pick That Flick in Criterion Month. She said, I was just listening today when you were talking about food and stuff, and you were talking about the Soul Train episodes. They're all so thin because the casting director screened folks and didn't hire feature fat dancers. And the singers from the Yacht Rock doc, which she watched, and she said it was amazing, they're all thin for the same reason this the Soul Train dancers are thin, and it's one word, cocaine. She says, keep up the great work.
Best, what if she was a casting director?
Well, she's probably right about the fact that they, you know, they do their thing. So I just thought that was one of those funny little things. And then we heard from our friend Bob, a.k.a. Buffy, who says hello. He'd also won some Criterion stuff. And then before we started recording the show today, I was telling Tim that we get some notes from listeners who are rediscovering that we are doing the podcast, that they used to listen to us on OutKue. And we're puzzling about that because I guess it makes sense, though. If you only heard us in the car, right, on Sirius,
right,
you might not have heard that final. And I don't think in our final episode we talked about going over to podcast land. We did that separately, right?
Well, we didn't know.
We didn't know at the time, yeah.
Where we were going. We're going to go somewhere. We just didn't know where. So, yeah.
And that somewhere ended up being an interesting somewhere for a while, right? Nothing bad, but we ended up being in a studio that was not quite what we thought it was.
Land of Misfit Toys.
Speaking of which, have you watched both your specials? That's your favorite is Rudolph, right?
Right, and it's been on twice, which I'm shocked about. It was on 2 weeks ago, and it was on again this week.
Broadcast?
Yeah, I don't know why. They played it twice, I guess so good, they had to play it again. And Richard and I watched it on Friday, and we were laughing. And again, you can tell, as you mentioned, toward the end, the last 10 minutes, those puppets are dirty with the fingerprints all over them.
The hands. It's the little gloves, the little white gloves, like Santa's gloves, right?
And then, of course, I don't know if you know, there's a lot of controversy. So they've added new scenes, or they added scenes that were deleted, I guess. And so at the very end.
Yeah. Are you serious?
Supposedly. So I saw this on Reddit. There's a whole conversation going on. They're upset at the very end. There's a scene where the elf throws out the bird from the Land of Misfit Toys. And they've essentially said that the elf teased the bird by not giving it an umbrella and threw the bird to its death. And someone's like, it is a cartoon.
Yeah, if you're not PETA, watching video,
PETA was up. PETA was upset. People are upset because the bird supposedly at the Land of Misfit Toys said it couldn't fly; it only swims.
That's right.
So the elf is up there, and the elf gives all the toys an umbrella to go down to, you know, as Santa's going over the houses. But he takes it away from the bird, and someone said, "Well, it's the magic of Santa. Once he was in the sleigh, he could fly." This is what, you know,
thank you, whoever that was, because that's like a parent making something up for a kid, right?
And someone said you're putting way too much into this. So,
isn't that the case, though? Isn't that always the case?
You know, it's funny you mentioned the shows. I guess how the casting, I guess they would pick for, back to the comment from the listener about the shows.
Oh, from Lisa about Soul Train. Yeah.
Because when I went to go see Jerry Springer, we were an odd lot. It looked like a perp walk other than the three of us that were there.
Right, you were in a suit and tie by any chance?
Was Jeff Walters, myself, and Sharon Delaney, who's Kim Delaney's cousin, and she's a very pretty woman. And we looked at a place in the Springer show, and they set us in a particular area, immediately pulled us out of the line. I thought, oh boy, what did we do? And set us so that we would be on camera most with Jerry. And I switched seats, and I got reprimanded. You get back in your seat. Because I wanted to sit at the end. I said, well, I want to sit where she goes. She's prettier than you. Get back. They wanted her right behind Jerry. So whenever he was in the audience, you could see her. But we were laughing. Yeah, they were very situational about where they were putting people to be on camera. So maybe they did do that. But I guess they did pick dancers. But I think if you look at anything, though, you look at old college pictures or people's pictures on Facebook, everybody was thinner. Non-processed foods. RFK might be right in some of this non-processed food stuff. What do you think?
But he could be the proverbial broken clock. He could be right sometimes and wrong other times, right? He's right twice a day, but the rest of the time, you better want to double check the time, right?
Everyone's going to look good, but a lot of you are going to get polio. So,
thank you. I didn't want to bring that up. I read that one, and I'm like, why would we even revisit this?
Yeah, pick or choose. So. Well, that's good. Well, that's
yeah, we I... watched, I finally got to, like, my, I love Rudolph. I've always loved Rudolph. But I think for some weird reason, my favorite Christmas special is Santa Claus Has Come to Town. Same bunch of people, Rankin and Bass and the stop motion puppets. But I know the songs word for word. And when the thing starts, I will just stand in front of the TV and I'll sing. And Bob just looks at me like I was just discharged. From, like, you know, did they sign the paperwork? Did you have your meds? You know, because it's a difficult responsibility. Da, 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 and the puppets are marching around, and I'm just having a ball. And it just,
I've got to watch
mood.
It. I haven't seen that in a long time. Was that on TV this year? No,
it usually is. ABC usually airs it. Okay. Although, here's a little hint, everybody, just go to YouTube,
yeah,
and ask for, like, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. It was HD, it was high quality. I saw one ad at the beginning, and that was it, and the rest of it. And by the way, Tim, you said something last week that was so true. When they take the ads out, Rudolph comes down to a pretty quick story.
Yeah. Boom, boom.
And so is Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. When you yank all the ads off, it's like 35, 40 minutes, you're in, you're out. I love it. I might watch it one more time just to sing along and make Bob think that I'm committable.
Well, that was the other thing in Rudolph. It was very much bullying. You know, they bullied the poor dentist. They bullied poor Rudolph.
Santa himself was no saint, right? Donner, how dare you have a child with a red nose?
Yeah. So, you know, it was all, so we all know, you know, the talking there. And then they were concerned. Yukon Cornelius apparently carried a gun. They don't know why he didn't shoot the bumble.
He didn't have to. He outwitted the bumble.
There was you got to get on the craziness of social media. I couldn't believe. I was shocked to hear all of the, but that's with anything now. People complain.
They'll find something wrong with anything, right?
Yeah. You know, God forbid if you listen to anybody about a 70s sitcom, because somebody had done something. There was something that popped up and it, they were saying how horrible it was. Oh, it was on Buzzer. They were showing some of the person was trying to do it was Chinese New Year. What is that show they do the with the pantomime?
Not the $10,000 pyramid.
Burt Convy was the host. And,
not Password.
Body something. Body language.
Yeah.
I think it was called Body Language or whatever. And they're trying to come up with Chinese New Year.
So they're doing pantomime. They're doing like, you know.
Oh, and drawings. Yeah. They're drawing the thing. I forget the name of the show, but so essentially he draws and gets a calendar, and then he hits the last and shows the last day, and somebody says, New Year, New Year. So he's trying to get him to do Chinese. So and the audience is, you know, people are screaming. So he draws a face and makes the Chinese eyes or whatever. And one of the contestants happened to be Asian. And so they guess it right away. And the crowd's going wild. Everybody's happy they got it. Even the Asian person was laughing, whatever. But this is horrible. How could this happen? This would never happen now. This is. But he was trying to get to Chinese New Year and the $5,000. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway. So, yeah, you're not allowed to do anything anymore. You know that.
No. And you and I talk about this a lot. I don't mean to be like a broken record, but some of the stuff I laughed at as a kid when we were learning like humor, et cetera, we cannot laugh at anymore, even though I still find it hilarious. But
well, you can't do Cowboys and Indians. You and I got in trouble when it was Pilgrims and Indians at Thanksgiving one year.
Yep, that's right.
Because, you know, you're apparently not allowed to dress as an Indian anymore.
Well,
kids
American.
Used to do that in school. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Make right. America great again.
Make America something again, I guess. All right, on that note, what caught your eye, Mr. Bennett?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
Well, speaking of problems.
I'm glad we gave you the segue there.
I know. This is a big one. Apparently, Bloomingdale's has a green Santa this year, and the parents are seeing red, and the kids are crying.
I see these pictures. If you happen to be watching on YouTube, and it's Focus Group Radio at YouTube.com, Tim provided a couple pictures. And Chris Kringle, let's just call him Chris, right? He's wearing like a deep, deep green velvet outfit with the white cuffs. Everything's the same, except it's deep green with some gold embroidery, which I have seen this, by the way, as one way they depict Santa. So what's the brouhaha?
There was also a problem within the Macy's Day Parade. Mrs. Claus was in green as well, which the crowd wasn't happy with. But this is Bloomingdale's, also in New York. They said people are seeing red over this green Santa as part of the holiday partnership with the film Wicked. Santa Land at the Bloomingdale's 59th Street flagship has been ossified, and people are not happy. They said there's pink Christmas trees, wand lollipops instead of candy canes, and Wicked-themed bracelets. And jolly old Saint Nick is wearing a green suit, not a red suit. They said the first group of kids that came in immediately started crying. They said this is an extreme. Parents have taken to social media. This is an extreme makeover. Bloomingdale's is not on the nice list. Some other woman has been directing families. Just a heads up, if you're going to see Santa Claus at Bloomingdale's, don't be shocked. He's not in his traditional red and white outfit. Bloomingdale's is only offering a green Santa this year. We left disappointed without a photo. We're now looking for another Santa to find for our photo this year. We want a traditional red Santa. They said it's against the true spirit of Christmas. It's galling. This is nothing
galling.
Galling. I'm reading the quotes. Leave Santa alone, said another one. Everything doesn't need to be changed or challenged, said Melanie from the Upper West Side, mother of one. She says there's no reason to have a green Santa except to promote this movie, which is already over commercialized. The green Santa is stupid. Hard pass. Kids are struggling with the change too. On Saturday at the Wicked Santa Land, they said the emerald clad elves even admitted that a baby came up and immediately started crying when he saw the green Santa. The elves are also in green. And the elves weren't happy about it. Six-year-old Jada Robinson said she was very, very, very surprised to see the green Santa. She was upset. She said red is more Christmassy. And an East Village first grader was also upset and left crying. They said that, that not only is he green, and then they went through the Christmas trees are pink, which I noticed this year too. When did pink and purple and everything become Christmas colors? They made a point of trying to tell the children beforehand that Santa is now green if you're going to go they don't want to throw the kids off. So they actually contacted Santa Doug, who is the Santa at Bloomingdale's since 2019. He said he was shocked as well about the wardrobe switcheroo and didn't find out until the 11th hour. He said it's the first time in his history of being a Santa Claus that he didn't wear red. So they've ended up contacting Santa School. There's apparently a Santa School, a 77-year-old founder of Santa, or School for Santa. He had said that had they known this, they would have not allowed any of their members to have dressed in green, that it's traditional and Santa needs to be in red. And he should have declined the job when he saw they were going to put him in a green suit.
So if you are an accredited Santa.
If you're a Santa, school for Santa, apparently, John, I was thinking of going.
And the school gets wind of the fact that you're going to wear something different than traditional red with the ermine or whatever the fur is. You may be yanked from the work line.
No longer an alum, perhaps. And you have to say you should decline the job. Santa wears red. I don't disagree.
Well, here we go again with why muck around with it? But you see, Tim, you set this up perfectly at the beginning. It was a tie-in to a movie that has nothing to do with Christmas, except for the time of year it's released, right?
Yep.
I mean, The Wizard of Oz, when we were kids, that was always, we always were allowed to have Swanson's TV dinner and The Wizard of Oz. But that was Thanksgiving, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, yes, around Thanksgiving-ish, Halloween, yeah, between then. And
you'd have your little TV dinner, and then you get to the apple crumble thing, whatever it was, and burn your tongue on it, because that was the thing that got the hottest in the...
And then burnt Jiffy Pop. Always burnt to the bottom. You never get it right.
Yeah, the pan, never. And it would look like a
an aluminum, cheap aluminum pie tin with some foil over the top and oil and butter.
I'm surprised we survived childhood, frankly, with the toys that we had.
Jiffy
creepy
pot,
crawlers, yeah. Lawn darts, the whole bit.
So that's what caught my eye. Green Santa at Bloomingdale's. They've contacted Bloomingdale's for comment. There's been no comment.
I doubt they'll comment. Yeah.
So if you're going to take your kid for the traditional Christmas photo, be aware that it's a green Santa this year at Bloomingdale's, and you should probably find another place.
Unless your child understands that Santa is a concept and not a color, you're all set. I just saw you make that face like, I don't know.
Even the elves chimed in, John. They were not happy either.
They were not happy, no.
No. So what caught
your eye? Teased what caught my eye at the beginning of the show. A woman had a custom license plates done, and she did it for her favorite TV show, mine too. So her custom plates were the call letters of the fictional Starship Enterprise from the show Star Trek. And if you've watched the show, you know that the Enterprise call letters are NCC. 1701. Well, she had that as a custom license plate here in the state of New York for a number of years.
Can I ask what that means? Does it mean anything?
I never understood what the NCC was. Oh, Constitution class NC. I forget what the N means, but basically Gene Roddenberry invented that, and then someone figured out how to make it fit into the, you know, but he just came up with that because he used to be a Navy guy. So the woman's name is Betta Khoury. She's a 76-year-old Long Island resident, and she has a problem. So she stopped driving about 3 years ago. But when she was driving, she would pay $31.25 per year for custom plates that said NCC-1701 as the identifier. Since she's given up the custom plates and she hasn't driven in 3 years, she still gets every single ticket that's given to someone with those plates around the country. And what she didn't know when she had this was novelty stores would actually sell license plates that said that on it, like it said Star Trek, whatever. And people would put these on their car, these novelty plates, and they would get speeding tickets and stuff like that. So she spends a good part of her days returning emails, answering people, I'm not paying this. So someone goes out and they buy a $15 like vanity plate from Amazon, put it on the back of their car, they speed. The ticket eventually winds its way to her. For their part, the New York Department of Motor Vehicles seems unable to fix this issue. The agency told CBS News that there is nothing in the state system that connects Khoury to the plates, which she gave up years ago. The problem, it seems, stems from other states. So other states don't update their DMV databases from other states that frequently, and it seems like they're 3 to 4 years out of step. So she's showing up in other state DMVs while the New York state one has her cleared and she's no longer even driving a car. I don't know how this affects, you know, her credit rating or things like that, but, you know, she said that it's everything. She's gotten speeding tickets. She gets pinged for wrong way driving. Like anything someone gets a ticket for, if they have one of these fake Star Trek.
So if she's in New York, she's in New York.
Long Island, yeah.
Long Island. So if you were in Pennsylvania and you had the fake plates that you bought.
Faking right. Fake plates, yeah.
Wouldn't it, so when they hit it in, they're saying, or the whatever the database DMV, is,
yeah.
Pushes it to New York.
Mm-hmm. Pushes it to her. It doesn't push it to New York. It takes the data that the PA's DMV grabbed from New York 4 years ago and uses that as the basis of sending her a ticket.
Because I'm surprised that when it, since it's unregistered now, but I guess that's the pain in the ass. So you got to call and say, this is not registered. Mm-hmm. I haven't had this plate in 3 years.
So she either has to go to every state and tell them to update their DMV database, because they'll grab the data from New York, and they should be doing it on a more frequent basis. But, you know, here's government in action, folks. State government.
Yep. That's horrible.
So here's what happens. People buy these novelty plates in most cases because they think it's a fun thing. They drive around, get tickets, they commit some sort of infraction, the plates get pinged, and ultimately they lead back to Corey, who owned the actual plates. So when the ticket goes out, they end up going to her address because, again, the database is it's old data.
I can't believe they'd be stupid enough to give a ticket to a fake plate. Which leads me to an idea. We might as well get fake plates and go to resort areas or whatever and just put them on for the day or two you're there and don't have to pay the high cost for parking. And then you put your real plate on when you leave.
You know, it's like here in New York.
Or run them through the Easy Pass.
And here's something that I don't know. Law enforcement is trying to crack down on this. But have you ever seen people driving and they have something over their license plate, which almost makes it hard to read?
Yeah, they can't do the reader. Yeah,
exactly. And they're basically illegal. And I read a statistic somewhere where those covers cost the toll authorities in various states not hundreds, not millions of dollars over the course of time. And here they're raising tolls and they're, you know, they want to do, here in New York, they want to do congestion pricing. Why don't you just enforce that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Why don't you? So they recently did this big thing at the GW Bridge where they had a dragnet. They pulled all these people over who had those covers and they were issuing tickets. But you know, that's the kind of thing, like people are so, they'll find a way around.
One step ahead. Right? Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, I got that ticket in New York and got that stupid boot for no reason other than we misread the sign.
Yeah.
But
I remember that day, Tim. Did we have lunch with someone over on the West Side? And then, you know, you had to go all the way over to like the West Side Highway. And
thank God I had money with me.
Yeah. Cash.
Because you had to pay cash. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
I remember because I left you. You were trying to get that figured out. I took the train up. It took you 2 or 3 hours just to get the boot off. And then you had to drive home.
And then there was all typical New York. You got a lot of people side hustle. Hey, I'll take that boot off for you for $100, which I was tempted to do waiting. But I, you know, I had paid the fine. So I'm just waiting for them to come take the damn thing off. But yeah, there was lots of people with toolboxes coming by. Hey, I'll take that off for you. Which I guess
if you had to do again, would you have done the.
I might have done that and just played stupid that I wasn't in New York. I live in Pennsylvania, you know, but I'm sure they take a picture of your car or whatever, but. Just whatever. Roll the dice.
Indeed.
I'm still owed $15 from parking at the Trenton train station next time I go there.
And you're not going to forget that.
Guy never gave us our money back during the pandemic, remember?
I do remember that, yes. All right. As many of you know, our partner here on the Focus Group is Deep Discount. They've been with us for quite a long time. They're good friends of the show, and we love working with them and would encourage you to visit deepdiscount.com by going to our site, focusgroupradio.com, and clicking on the Deep Discount logo. As it was with last week, it's last-minute gift sale time. You know, anything you want to pick up at the last minute, by all means, you could probably do it and probably get it by Christmas. I'm not going to promise, but, you know, with shipping, you might be able to do that. So, Tim, what did you pick in anticipation of the last gifts of the year?
Right. So, as you said, you can own your passion and or get your passion for somebody else or get their passion. Tens of thousands of items on sales, movies, music, games, TV, and more. And so I did a combo this year. I was feeling, I think because of what I was watching on TV, I was feeling a little bit sentimental. And came across, it popped up on my feed, The Big Chill, the Criterion Collection, which has...
Wait. I didn't realize this. Criterion does The Big Chill. Okay, that's the
gold
stamp.
Yeah, they released it in 2014. And Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, Kevin Kline, Glenn Close, Meg Tilly, Tom Berenger. It It looks that there was a group of friends grew up in the 60s or 30-somethings from when the movie came out. I believe it came out in 1983. And they all get together after the death of this friend and kind of reunite for his funeral, end up spending the weekend together. And as would happen with any of these sort of stories, we all kind of go back to our roles, right? Whether you were in high school or college or whatever the friends' roles were. And so I just think it was one of those things to me that just brought back kind of the sentimental aspect of, I remember watching it the first time and then probably not knowing as a late teen, early 20s, the significance of it as I would now if I watched it. And then you can get the companion LP, which I thought was pretty cool. So not only could you get the DVD from with the Criterion Collection of The Big Chill, you could also get the LP, which has some great music on it. Heard It Through the Grapevine, Tracks of My Tears, Joy to the World, I Second That Emotion, Whiter Shade of Pale, on and on. It's a great soundtrack. Probably one of the best soundtracks for movies out there.
Agreed.
So that's on an LP and vinyl.
You could probably get it on CD as well, but I'm very glad you picked the LP because that sort of sets the time frame for The Big Chill, right?
Yep. So you can get, which I think would be a great gift, you can get the Big Chill DVD.
From Criterion.
It's and then get the LP. And for somebody that's a fan, it would be, I think, a pretty cool gift.
I went with a Criterion disc too, surprisingly. I was shopping there because when you go to Deep Discount, you could shop by studio, you could shop by you could filter by a whole lot of stuff. So I filtered for Criterion. And I came across a movie that I've heard about, but I really never saw. And it's called The Comfort of Strangers. But what makes me want to get it, and I am going to get it, is the cast. So it's Rupert Everett and Natasha Richardson play this couple. And they meet another couple, which is Christopher Walken and Helen Mirren. Now, the two of those, right? Christopher Walken and Helen Mirren together as a couple. So it's like adapting the acclaimed novel by Ian McEwan, playwright and screenwriter Harold Pinter, who is really great with dialogue, lends his trademark unnerving dialogue and air of creeping menace to this spellbinding study of power, control, and the frighteningly thin line between pleasure and pain. Rupert Everett and Natasha Richardson are the prey, a beautiful British couple working on their relationship while on holiday in Venice. Great location. Christopher Walken and Helen Mirren are the hunters who draw them into the sinister web of their opulent old world palazzo. What plays out is an unsettling sadomasochistic seduction imbued with an atmosphere of sumptuous dread by the elegantly gliding tracking shots of cinematographer Dante Spinotti, lush score, and carefully controlled direction of Paul Schrader, who choreographs a mesmerizing pas de quatre, of sustained erotic and emotional tension. So just based on who's in it, I was like, I really think I need to see this.
I can't read the screen too well. When did that come out?
I want to say it's 1980, I think. I put the date.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 1990. I'm sorry, it came out in 1990. So, you know, Christopher Walken's really young then.
Right.
So is Helen Mirren. Like, so they're all like kind of in their prime. I mean, these are great actors. So for me, I picked The Comfort of Strangers on Criterion. It's available on Blu-ray for $27.10. We do have a new release this week as well. And this is the Joker, Folie à Deux, which is the follow-up to the original Joker, which did gangbusters at the box office. It just says here that Arthur Fleck, institutional. I think Arthur Fleck is the character that Joaquin Phoenix plays as the Joker. Institutionalized at Arkham, awaiting trial for his crimes as Joker, while struggling with his dual identity, Arthur not only stumbles upon true love, but also finds the music that's always been inside him. So I think Lady Gaga is in this movie as well, right? Does that make sense?
It would make sense. She probably is.
I think that's her on the cover there. But
yep.
I never saw the original Joker, even though a lot of friends were like, you got to see this. So this would be fun as a gift. You could probably get Joker and then Joker Folie à Deux, which is the second part, and make a perfect gift.
I don't know French. What's Folie à Deux mean? Happy too? Happy? I don't know.
Well, à deux is two. So this, I don't know. Like Folie Bergère is like a show of two or something, I think.
Probably Joker 2.
Do you want me to look it up?
No. Well, I just thought, you know, you being a Francophile, you might know. I didn't know Je Folie. It was probably, I don't know. That's an interesting one. So, hey, you can get some last-minute gift ideas, as we mentioned, from our friends at Deep Discount. You can get there by going to our site, which is focusgroupradio.com, clicking on the Deep Discount logo. There's still time for some last-minute gift ideas, or you can get stuff for yourself and own your passion there. I picked The Big Chill this week and also The Big Chill soundtrack, which you can get on LP. As John mentioned, you could probably get it in other formats as well, but I thought as a gift, it'd be cool for somebody because of the era to have the movie plus the LP. John picked a movie called The Comfort of Strangers, which is also Criterion. So ironic that we both picked Criterion discs this week. And the new release is Joker, Folie à deux.
Which means Madness for Two.
Madness for Two. Oh, I would have got that
now
wrong.
It makes sense, right?
Yeah, Madness for Two. Joker. Madness for Two. I wonder why they didn't call it Madness for Two. Something's in there. Something's up.
Well, maybe they like the French. Throws people off.
Folie à deux.
Folie à deux.
Folie à deux. So, again, head over to Discount and start shopping away. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a shop talk, which talks about smart ways to consider making purchases, which I think is quite fun, and also our business birthday this week, so stay with us.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Welcome back to the Focus Group. John Nash here with Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is the website. And of course, if you visit, you'll learn about our partner Deep Discount. Also, our companion podcast, 20 minutes every beginning of every week, called TFG Unbuttoned, stands for the Focus Group Unbuttoned. And as promised, without further ado, Mr. Bennett has a business birthday for us.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but the Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
I think we mentioned them earlier in the show, or we did it on our podcast, which is TFG Unbuttoned. But today, born December 18th, celebrating his 89th birthday, is Jacques Pepin.
He comes up a lot because aren't you trying to duplicate his recipes?
So I love him, and Richard thinks I've got some sort of sick fascination with him. So I watch his stuff. It pops up all the time. He's got a, he has a YouTube, he's, mm-hmm. We'll get into it. He does a bunch of things, but he's got on social media. He's one who's reinvented himself quite a little bit like Martha Stewart, but he has this series now called Cooking at Home, which has been released on YouTube and Facebook. And I'm a little irritated with it because I love it. And now this past weekend, as I was watching, they're now inserting far too many commercials interruptions. There was never any commercial interruption while he was cooking. Now there's probably two or three with each one, which drives me crazy. There are only 4 6-minute clips. He's famous for, so he's French chef, author, culinary educator, television personality, and artist. And before I get into his actual bio, what I like about watching him is the simplicity of the food, and you would love him because he doesn't waste anything. He'll go into the refrigerator and come out with a mushroom that might be past its time, or celery that's a little wilted or whatever, and bread that has gone bad, and figure out a gourmet meal. It's unbelievable. The only other person I knew who could do that was our friend Mary Seton. We'd go to her house, and she would just open up the refrigerator, and whatever was there, she'd make, and it would be unbelievable. He was doing something the other day with, he said he goes to bakeries and gets the day old stuff, no matter what it is. And he puts it all in a food processor, adds some condensed milk, other stuff, da 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 da. Next thing you know, he's got this incredible pastry thing that he makes. And he said his granddaughter came over and wanted cookies. He had no cookies. He took Wonder Bread, sugar, toast, and jam and made cookies. It was unbelievable.
I'm stuck at the Wonder Bread as an ingredient.
Yeah, he cut the, I mean, it's unbelievable. The stuff he does, anyway, I find it, and the stuff always looks fantastic. So I've tried, I've failed. I try to do the, I shouldn't say mastered. I'm getting close to doing the French omelet, which is actually very different than a regular omelet.
Really?
And yeah, and it does taste different. I don't know why, but he's right. So if you watch his,
what kind of
that's what he's famous
that
for.
In?
Well, he uses nonstick, but it's constant movement, and he doesn't have any problem hitting metal on metal with the Teflon. Keep moving things,
oh,
shaking,
okay.
Shaking.
That's interesting. Okay.
And every time I try to do it, Richard's yelling because it makes so much racket. But
why, he's whisking it in the pan?
With a fork. He only uses a fork. And it does taste different. It does taste. Now he uses a lot of butter, but it does taste different. So as I said, he was born December 18th, 1935. He's 89 years old today. He was the personal chef for French President Charles de Gaulle. I had no idea.
Interesting.
And so he actually worked for three heads of state in France, left in 1959 to come to the U.S. to work at some French restaurants, and was immediately contacted by Jackie O and John F. Kennedy. They wanted him to come work at the White House. He said no. He turned it down for a job at Howard Johnson's.
Whoa, that's quite different. Okay.
So Howard Johnson had known him and seen him from his cooking, from his French cooking, and wanted him to help redefine the menu of Howard Johnson's. And he will often talk about this when he's doing his show, which is even funnier. He'll say, when I was at Howard Johnson, here's what we would do with leftover chicken. And then he would make, he said, because chicken the next day, if you roast it, it's really not as good, but you could do lots of great things with it other ways. He goes, at Howard Johnson's, we would do this. We did this with leftover fish. We did this with leftover bread. So he totally revamped the Howard Johnson's menu. I had no idea he did that, but he does talk about it on his show. He served numerous prestigious restaurants, not only in Paris, but also in the U.S. He had written for the New York Times, Food and Wine, became very close friends with Julia Child. They did a show together on PBS, for which he won an Emmy Award. He ended up going back to school here in the U.S. and got a B.A. And a master's from Columbia in French literature. He was honored 24 times by the James Beard Foundation and also American Public TV. Bunch of French honors. He lived in Connecticut since 1975. Met his wife in 1966.
At Walden Books.
Yeah, could have, right?
When you were working the register.
Met her, and he was a ski instructor in the 60s. And he met her while he was working as a ski instructor in France. She was from Puerto Rico. Her name was Gloria, and they got married. They have a daughter. She died in 2020. They have one daughter named Claudine, who's very much in his life. But you could see the love he had for his wife. He brings her up all the time. This is my wife's favorite dish. Or this was the way my wife used to like when I would make something or other. So it's actually quite nice to hear. The one thing that I did not know about him, because he talks about a lot of cooking things, but didn't talk a lot about his personal life so much. After he became on these television shows and became this famous cook in the U.S., he was on What's My Line to Tell the Truth and so forth. But in 1974, he had what could have been a fatal car accident, and which essentially ended his cooking career with restaurants. So he was badly injured while driving in Connecticut. A deer jumped out in front of the car. He swerved to avoid it. He hit the deer. He went off the road, struck a telephone pole, crashed into a ravine upside down. The car caught on fire. So he fractured 14 bones in his back, his pelvis, and his arms.
Oh my
His left arm was so badly injured that they were going to amputate it.
Oof.
And he said no, he didn't want it amputated. So it left his shoulder with limited mobility, and his left arm is now several inches shorter than his right. So it's funny, after I read this, I went back and watched, and you could see the way they film him that he really doesn't use his left arm much.
Oh my.
In his autobiography, he talked about it, and he said that the car accident made him realize he was no longer going to be able to be a chef or a restaurateur, and he needed to figure out how he's going to reinvent himself. This is in 1974. And that's when he started writing books, started teaching, and the other cooks around, they particularly mentioned Julia Child and some other folks, had really helped him out to get him on PBS, get him on public TV, help him with writings, help him set up classes and master classes at universities and so forth. So they really all rallied around him, which I thought was nice to hear.
Uh-huh. I agree.
So So that's Jacques Pepin. He still lives in Connecticut, and he had a minor stroke in 79, but he insisted on still keeping a normal schedule. And he, as I said, he just in 2020 launched this Cooking at Home series, which if you're on YouTube or you go to some of the channels, I think Pluto actually has them on with Julia Child cooking together. But the one with him on his own is just enjoyable. They're quick, 4 minutes, 6 minutes, and they're just fun to watch. So happy birthday, Jacques Pepin.
Related to him and his accident, Tim, deer, like animal issues that pop up in front of the car, like, am I mistaken, or like the pro drivers that you and I have been with, and this is thanks to our working with Subaru, am I mistaken? It's just keep going. Don't swerve to avoid. You're going to do more harm than good. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like people will see a squirrel or something darts out in front, you slam on the brake. I still do that. I think you're naturally going to do that. You don't want to hit something.
Correct.
But the deer thing, and you know, in Connecticut, Pennsylvania, particularly in the Northeast at dusk, it's dangerous. There were times in Pennsylvania, which is overrun with deer. But Connecticut's the same way. It's very rural and a lot of areas still. And the deer are out, and they're obviously not looking, right? And they're just darting across the streets. And so we all know somebody who's hit a deer, you know?
Yep.
And I'm sure it happens across the country as well. So I don't know what he could have done. When he said he swerved to avoid it, he ended up flipping over and car catches on fire, but it still hit the deer.
Yeah, a friend of mine upstate, she hit a deer once. I think it totaled the car.
Yeah.
But I believe that she did that. She practiced that notion of not swerving. I don't think she could swerve because there was a car coming in the other direction. Right. This thing came off a little hill or a rise. And so the deer obviously died quickly. And she had the car, but she was fine. She walked away from that, you know, just got out of the car. And it's like, okay, the car's got to be totaled. And I remember reading that somewhere, and I just thought, oh, what a hard, like, it's so hard to rewire your brain to not hurt the animal, right? And yet you're going to potentially end up like Jacques Pepin and it, like, doing a lot of harm just to.
Well, what they try to do, what they do here, and I know they do in a lot of states in the Northeast, and I'm sure, again, across the country, is that if it's killed early enough, the state, you know, public works or departments of transportation or whatever have a group of people where they'll harvest the deer for the meat.
Yes.
And
in other words, they use it.
Yeah. So, you will see, particularly this time of year, I know on the PA Turnpike, you would see deer all, you know, every few miles.
They're driving home on the Taconic. They're in the median. They're between, and I'm like, how'd they get over there? I'm on high alert at twilight. I look for that little sparkle their eyes make because they don't see head on. I think it's because of their vision.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to check out the Jacques Pepin. You got to watch it as well on YouTube.
You'll learn some things because you know, even teach how to make bread without going through the hassle of really the long arduous process of yeast and letting it rise and whatever. He's all about simplicity. He's about simplicity and economics and using what you have
and using up what you have.
Yeah.
I'm there. All right.
You're there.
We did say that we have a shop talk for you folks, and we're going to go into that right now. It's not a long one, but it's a clever one. And basically, it's this woman named Lori Konish is the author, and she's also written a book about this stuff. And the headline read, "Applying this $1 rule is a secret to guilt-free shopping," expert says, and she's the expert. So she and her husband had racked up at one point something like $300,000 in debt. And it's her name is Bernadette Joy, the woman who came up with this, the author of the piece is the other one. And by 2020, they were debt-free. I would love to know that story. Apparently, there's a book that she wrote about it called Crush Your Money Goals. But in order for her to not be crazy about saving money or being too maniacal about don't buy this, don't buy that, don't enjoy life, she came up with a simple, for her, she came up with something called the $1 rule. And basically it's this, the $1 rule is her twist on cost per use, cost per wear. And she's a financial coach now. And she said, it's okay to buy something if it comes out to a dollar a use. So I tried to, an example she gave was she had a friend who was looking to buy a very expensive couch. She used her dollar rule with him and said, he could buy the couch, but he has to keep it for 5 years and he has to sit on it daily. Well, the sitting on it daily is not going to be too hard. And I guess keeping it for 5 years is going to work because we have furniture for a while. But have you tried the math on anything in your life?
Oh, I do it all the time. And you've done it. You did it to me when you were trying to convince us to buy the iPads. Don't you remember?
That's true. I did. Yeah.
I'm like, John, they're $800. You're like, well, they'll last 3 years. And if you define and use it every day, that's about $260, less than a dollar a day. Okay. You sold me. Now I can't get rid of it. No, I've done it. I just did it recently with, and I'm sure you've done it with gym memberships.
Yep.
You'll say, okay, if I'm spending X amount on a gym membership, I need to go at least 15 days to make it worth my while, or whatever the number, whatever the number is. No, I do it with everything. I will do it with furniture. I will say, okay, we need to buy a new chair or something, or a sofa. You will sit on it every day. It's probably too much money at the, for the direct hit at one time. But when you say, okay, we're going to have it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Then it ends up being, oh, it's, you know, $7 a month over the next 10 years. Well, then you're like, well, okay.
She was going to, the woman who came up with this was going to buy a warming plate 1 year. You know, like one of those things you have at parties, like for chafing dish or whatever, a warming plate. And she figured that for the two times a year she would do it and she was going to spend more than $30, it just wasn't, it wasn't penciling out. And you know, that sort of makes sense. I did this the other day where I had to buy, this time of year, I get a, there's a lot of deals going on, right? So I usually buy new t-shirts and some socks. And I added up those things that I've spent money on. And then I divided it with the underwear and the t-shirts. I thought, well, if I'm wearing, if I, let's say you had seven new t-shirts and you have, you were, you, you know, you have to just say that you're going to wear one of them, not every day of the year, but basically you divide, you know, I did the math. And all this new clothing or these essentials, whatever you want to call it, the basic stuff came out to less than, I think it was like 22 cents a day. So sweaters, socks, and some t-shirts, like, okay, I came fine with that. Where it falls apart for me is my athletic stuff, the bike and the gym. So here in the city, I go to Equinox, which is not a cheap gym, and I would have to go every single day for hours to make the dollar thing work. So that's...
Yeah, but a dollar thing there is not realistic. And I think your bicycle, I think your first bike, and I remember us having this conversation, it makes sense because the how old is that other bike you had? That was
13 years.
15 years? 13 years.
It had 42,000 miles on it, I think.
So when you actually do that and say, okay, 13 years and how much use you got, and if you did it by mile or something.
Oh, it's paid for itself handsomely.
Because I've done the same thing with, I'm a member of a club and I think it's, I keep every year and I don't go as much as I should. It's a social club.
Yeah.
But when I figure it out, I'm like, okay, it's less than $2 a day. It's more than a dollar, but it's less than two.
Two, yeah.
Do I give up the 30 years I was a member? It's in Philly, so I can't go. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I wondered, you know, do I? And everybody says, just keep it because you don't know. You know, you and I have used the club once in a while.
But I've told you this before about this. My old career coach, Mike, said to me, because he used to be a rabbi and he belongs to this rabbinical society. I think it's like $1,500 a year. And he's like, I don't go anymore. And I said, well, why do you spend the money? He said, it's part of my identity.
And it keeps you tethered, right? It keeps them attached to the, right.
So I guess the dollar rule, I like the dollar rule. I think it's a great yardstick to put against purchases, especially, and she also talks in the article about like taking a breather. Like you think you're going to buy something, take that. And that's like my granddad used to have that rule. Take 24 hours and approach it again. You may not want it. It may not have the same. Like I told Tim a while ago, I think on one of the shows that I was jonesing, I thought I need to get a new MacBook because they just released this new MacBook. After 24 hours, I'm like, you know what? I don't need a new one. The one that I'm using is fine. It's going to be fine for a couple more years and done, right?
Yeah. No, I hear you. So, but I think it's great. I love this when you pick this because I thought I do it all the time to say, okay, if I amortize this out, what is it? What's it really going to cost me? Or is it just crazy?
So. There seems to be a theme in the back end of the show today. Jacques Pepin using anything in the refrigerator that may be a day or 2 years old, or, you know, whipping up something fantastic in our dollar rule. So, like, penurity seems to be.
We're our grandparents' grandchildren.
Totally. Yeah.
Right. You know, use everything, right? Make sure it gets used.
Use it up, wear it out, make it do, or do without.
Or do without. So, hey, thanks for joining us today here on the Focus Group. We appreciate the time you spend with us. We're now in our 16th year as we head into 2025 will be in our 17th, John. Would that be correct?
And you thought it was late April would be the start of the 17th year.
Yeah. No, late March.
Late March. Okay.
Late March, yeah. And so we want to thank you again for joining us. Thanks to our friends at Deep Discount. They're a partner here, and you can get to them by going to focusgroupradio.com. There's some last-minute gift ideas. It's still time for you to shop. I picked The Big Chill this week, which is also, you can get a companion LP with that as well, with the soundtrack, which is great. John picked a Criterion, given the Criterion treatment, that would be what it's called.
Criterion, a good housekeeping seal of approval.
Yes, which The Big Chill is, and then also The Comfort of Strangers, which John had picked. And then the new release this week is Joker. Well, I say it right, Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux.
Folie à Deux. So Joker, that's the new,
Joker 2
is the new release. Remember, a lot of people out on the roads, happy holidays, and don't text or drive. Arrive alive, and we'll see you next week here. Actually, it's Christmas. We are going to be on Christmas, but we're going to pre-record. So,
last show of the year.
We'll see you Christmas Day. Yep. Take care.
It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning Focus Group.